This is The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. I'll ask the questions, and I'll let the book do the talking using words from its own pages. This is essentially a book interview. Your time is valuable, so let's get started. Today, I'll be interviewing Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain, by John Rady and Eric Hagerman. It currently has an overall rating of 4.6 on Amazon, and 74% of the reviewers call it a 5-star book. Spark is an important book on a practical subject, but at times it can feel like it's written for medical researchers. That is, it's not always the most entertaining read. Question number one, what's the book about? Answer, Spark is the first book to explore comprehensively the connection between exercise and the brain. It will forever change the way you think about your morning run, or for that matter, simply the way you think. It's about how aerobic exercise physically remodels our brains for peak performance and how it has a profound impact on cognitive abilities and also mental health. Question. Let's start with cognition first. You make the case that there's a correlation between fitness level and academic achievement in kids. What is it? Answer. The most telling studies come from the California Department of Education, CDE. Over the years, the CDE has consistently shown that students with higher fitness scores also have higher test scores. The CDE correlated scores from standard achievement tests with scores from what they call the Fitness Gram, the state-mandated physical assessment, for more than 1 million students. Bottom line, the initial studies showed that fit kids scored twice as well on academic tests as their unfit peers. When the CDE repeated the study in 2006, it factored in socioeconomic status. As expected, students with higher standard of living scored better on academic tests, but the results also showed that within lower income students, fitter kids once again scored better than unfit kids. Question. But fitness isn't always caused by exercise alone. Genetics and diet can play a big role in how fit we are. Do you have any studies that show exercise alone can boost brain power? Answer, yes. In 2004, a panel of 13 researchers conducted a massive review of 850 studies about the effects of physical activity on school-aged children. Most of the studies measured the effects of 30 to 45 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity 3 to 5 times a week. Looking specifically at academic performance, the panel found enough evidence to support the findings of the California studies. It reported that physical activity has a positive influence on memory, concentration, and classroom behavior. Question. Getting deeper into the weeds, you mentioned zero-hour PE, and you credit it as the spark that caused you to write this book. What exactly is zero-hour PE? Answer. Zero-hour PE involved 19,000 students in Naperville, Illinois School District 203. It refers to a physical education class before the first period for a select group of students in high school. The objective of zero-hour PE was to determine whether working out before school gave these kids a boost in their reading ability. At first, zero-hour PE was isolated to freshmen required to take a literacy class to bring their reading comprehension up to par. They'd work out before their first class at a high intensity, somewhere between 80 and 90% of their maximum heart rate. The results in the end were impressive. The students who exercised in zero-hour PE showed a 17% improvement in reading and comprehension, doing nothing else but exercising before class. This improvement was much higher than a control group that did not take the class. The school administration was so impressed that they incorporated zero-hour PE into the high school curriculum as a first period literacy class called Learning Readiness PE. It has since gained national attention and become the model for a type of gym class that would be unrecognizable to any adult reading this. Question. So what's so unrecognizable about this gym class? Answer. The essence of physical education in zero-hour PE is teaching fitness instead of sports. No getting nailed in dodgeball, no flunking for not showering, no standing around in a sporting event. The kids train and get graded on their effort using heart rate monitors. These students used heart rate monitors before they used the internet, and they've developed into some of the smartest kids in the nation. Question. A practical takeaway for adults is that the positive effects of exercise on performance seem to have a time limit for these students. Can you explain? Answer. That's right. The students who initially took 0-hour PE were split into two literacy groups. One group attended their class immediately following the morning exercise. The other group attended their literacy class at the end of the day, in eighth period. As expected, the early literacy class students performed best. The positive effect of exercise spread beyond the reading scores, however, and guidance counselors eventually started suggesting that all students schedule their hardest subjects immediately after gym to capitalize on the beneficial effects of exercise. It's a revolutionary concept from which we can all learn. If you have an important afternoon brainstorming session, interview, presentation, or any other hard mental task, going for a short, intense run during lunchtime is a smart idea. Question. In the book, you say that exercise not only improves cognition, but also mental health. In fact, you claim it helps in ways that pharmaceutical drugs cannot help. How is that? Answer. Exercise has a unique effect on brain chemistry. Most drugs we use to improve mental health target one or more of three neurotransmitters, serotonin, norepinephrine, or dopamine. But simply raising or lowering the level of a single neurotransmitter does not elicit a crisp one-to-one result because brain chemistry is so complex. I tell people that going for a run is like taking a little bit of Prozac and a little bit of Ritalin because, like most drugs, exercise elevates these neurotransmitters. It's a handy metaphor to get the point across, but the deeper explanation is that exercise balances neurotransmitters, along with the rest of the neurochemicals in the brain. Keeping your brain in balance is the big thing, and it can change your life. Question. Speaking of life changes, you cite a study in the book that suggests exercise can actually change personality traits like discipline and self-regulation. What was that about? Answer. Australian researchers measured the effect of a 2-month exercise program on self-regulation. Every 2 weeks, 24 students were given 2 psychological tests, and they kept diaries of their daily habits. The results, published in 2006 in the British Journal of Health and Psychology, are profound. Aside from improving on the 2 tests, the participants reported an entire range of behavior related to self-regulation took a turn for the better. Not only did they steadily increase their visits to the gym, they reported that they smoked less, they drank less caffeine and alcohol, they ate more healthy food and less junk food, they curbed impulse spending and overspending, they lost their tempers less often, they procrastinated less and kept more appointments. Finally, they didn't leave dishes in the sink, at least not as often. Question. That's a long list of positive daily changes, and most of the things on that list can be thought of as addictive behaviors. So the question is, how much exercise do you recommend for people who have an addictive personality? Answer. If you have a tendency toward addictive behavior, it's vital to develop some sort of consistent exercise habit. I would say that 30 minutes of vigorous aerobic exercise 5 days a week is the bare minimum if you want to root out an addiction. I've seen a lot of people who bury themselves in addiction when they lose their jobs, so if you're unemployed, having exercise in place is essential. And while I often suggest that people exercise in the morning, if your goal is to break a habit such as having a drink at night when you come home, then exercising in the evening is probably a better strategy. Question. On the topic of mental health, what about exercise and depression? Answer. Several sweeping studies have looked at the correlation from slightly different angles, and all of them came to the same conclusion. A massive Dutch study of 19,000 twins and their families showed that exercisers are less anxious, less depressed, less neurotic, and also more socially outgoing. A Finnish study of 3,400 people showed that those who exercise at least 2 to 3 times a week experience significantly less depression, anger, stress, and cynicism compared to those who exercise less or not at all. Another study from the Epidemiology Department of Columbia University surveyed 8,000 people and also found the same inverse relationship between exercise and depression. All studies conclude that exercise helps depression. Question: is there any relationship between daily exercise and job satisfaction? Answer: since the office is a primary source of stress for a lot of people, it's a good place to look for the benefits of exercise. In 2004, researchers at Leeds Metropolitan University in England found that workers who used their company's gym were more productive and felt better able to handle their workloads. Most of the 210 participants in the studies took an aerobics class at lunchtime for 45 minutes to an hour. Others lifted weights or practiced yoga for 30 minutes to an hour. The bottom line, 65% fared better on the days that they exercised. Overall, they felt better about their work and less stressed on the job, and they felt less fatigued in the afternoon despite expending more energy at lunchtime. Just keep in mind that the more stress you have, the more your body needs you to move to keep your brain running smoothly. Question: in the book, you calculate calorie burn as an exercise dose for general mental health and brain function. What's your formula? Answer: multiply your body weight by 8 to figure out how many calories you should be burning every week for the high dose of exercise. If you weigh 150 pounds, that equals 1,200 calories burned per week. This calorie burn translates into about 3 hours of exercise at moderate intensity, or 30 minutes 6 days a week. In other words, if you weigh 150 pounds and burn 200 calories in 30 minutes on the elliptical trainer, you'd want to do 6 sessions a week to meet the high dose. I'd recommend at least this much exercise for anyone who has a shadow syndrome of depression. These are people who aren't clinically depressed, but who tend to look at life with a primarily pessimistic attitude. Question: so let's get specific. For the average person, what's the minimum dose of exercise for brain health, and how often should we do it? Answer: at least 4 days a week, I suggest getting out there and walking briskly, or jogging, or playing tennis, or engaging in some form of activity that will get your pulse up to about 60 to 65% of your maximum heart rate. You want to keep it there for an hour, 4 days a week. People always want to know the type of aerobic activity that's best, and the answer is whatever you can build into your lifestyle. The important thing is to stick with it and make sure that you're elevating your heart rate long enough to get the benefits. Question: okay, that's the minimum dose of weekly exercise for my brain health. What's the optimal exercise regimen for my brain? Answer: the best plan would be aerobic activity 6 days a week for 45 minutes to an hour. 4 of those days should be on the longer side at moderate intensity, and 2 of the days on the shorter side at high intensity. In total, I'm talking about committing 6 hours a week to your brain. That works out to 5% of your waking hours. If you start walking an hour a day at between 55 to 60% of your maximum heart rate, you'll naturally increase the distance you walk over time and gradually get in better shape. Question: what's the main advantage of high-intensity aerobic activity? Answer: one of the key differences between moderate and high-intensity exercise is that once you get closer to your maximum, and especially once you get into the anaerobic range, the pituitary gland in your brain unleashes human growth hormone, HGH. This is what life extension groups call the fountain of youth. The levels of HGH naturally secreted into the bloodstream decrease over life, so by the time you're in middle age, they dwindle to a tenth of what they were during childhood for both men and women. But one study from the University of Bath in England found that adding a single spurt of sprinting for 30 seconds, in this case while pedaling on a stationary bike, generated a six-fold increase of HGH, which peaked 2 hours after the sprint. So even a small dose of pushing yourself to the limit has profound effects on your brain. Question. In terms of pushing yourself with intense exercise, how do you define high-intensity exercise levels? It seems to be a subjective term. Answer. The only way to accurately gauge your level of intensity is to use a heart rate monitor. They consist of a chest strap sensor that picks up your heartbeat and a digital watch that receives the signal and displays the number of beats per minute on its screen. Let's say your regimen calls for a high-intensity run. If you're 45 years old, your theoretical maximum heart rate would be about 175. This number comes from the formula of 220 minus your age. Starting at 175, if you calculate 75% and 90% of your maximum heart rate, the lower and upper limits for a high-intensity workout are 131 and 158. This is your target heart rate zone for this workout. Last question. Let's talk about the effects of exercise on dementia and cognitive decline with aging. You mentioned a groundbreaking finding in one of the studies that surprised the researchers. What did they find? Answer. The study consisted of 59 sedentary people ranging in age from 60 to 79. All subjects hit the gym 3 times a week for 1 hour over the course of 6 months. One group embarked on a stretching routine, while the other group walked on a treadmill. The treadmill group started out at 40% of their maximum heart rate and ramped up to 60 to 70% by the end of their workout. The groundbreaking finding came from MRI scans before and after. Those with improved fitness levels, the treadmill group, had an increase in brain volume in the frontal and temporal lobes. The major implication is that exercise not only keeps the brain from rotting, but also reverses cellular deterioration associated with aging. Population studies also support the evidence that exercise holds off dementia. In one, about 1,500 people from Finland, originally surveyed in the early 1970s, were contacted again 21 years later when they were between the ages of 65 and 79. Those who had exercised at least twice a week were 50% less likely to have dementia. And finally, my top 5 favorite quotes from the book are as follows. Exercise balances brain neurotransmitters. The more stress you have, the more your body needs you to move to keep your brain running smoothly. Sprinting for just 30 seconds generates a 6-fold increase in HGH. The only way to accurately gauge your level of intensity is to use a heart rate monitor. Exercise not only keeps the brain from rotting, but also reverses cell deterioration associated with aging. And that's it for this book interview with Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain by John J. Rady and Eric Hagerman. You've been listening to The Wealthy Bookheads, where we interview important books that can change your life. You can order this book in the links below or on our website if you'd like to support our cause. It puts a few pennies in our pockets without taking any extra pennies from yours. As always, thank you for your time.